favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Dude, yes. I just finished the Ministry of Time.
Oh,
and another like insufferable woman protagonist that we're just like, fuck, dude, you suck.
Compared you guys to, like, all hear that? Phil Acevedo hates women protagonists.
Wow.
Stop it.
Phil Acevedo hates.
Stop it. No, dude.
Hate Sidney Prescott. You heard it here first.
I was gonna go there.
I love Sidney Prescott. And I love Ellen Ripley. And I love, remember when people said that, who was it? Jennifer Lawrence is like the first female action star because of a movie. And I was like, wait, what the hell, dude? What about Sigourney Weaver?
Where the fuck have you been? Yeah.
Yeah. What fucking rock have you lived under? Yeah. Jesus.
I was like, geez. But anyway, Sidney Prescott, one of the fucking goats, one of my favorite scream queens, which. What are we talking about, guys? Damn, was that my little transition?
That was your transition.
Was that my little segue?
Traumatized women protagonists. We're talking about Scream 4 today, guys.
Yeah, Scream 4.
Let me do the intro. Okay, first of all, no. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
I want to play a game? That's the wrong franchise.
God
all right.
Damn it. And female protagonist hater, Phil Acevedo.
Welcome to primetime, bitch. I mean, wait a minute. Wrong franchise also. My bad.
Oh,
hey.
Shit. Are we going to keep doing this?
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't know if you guys have looked at the outline, but you kind of stole my bid.
Oh, wow. That's funny. I have not.
Oh, we totally didn't. Oh, that's pretty good.
That's funny.
I didn't even scroll down.
Now I'm looking at it. Wow.
Yeah.
Stole my
fucking bit. I see what you're doing here.
We just collectively were just trying to just be shit talkers, but that actually worked out pretty well.
Yeah, you gave one to Fwen that belongs to fucking me, but we'll get to that anyways.
That's also a running bit from last week. Go listen to
that. I figured. I like how it just bleeds right into this episode. Whatever, dude.
All right, guys. Let's go ahead and get started. Yes, as previously mentioned, we are talking about Scream 4 from
Scriforum.
2011. Yeah, Scream Forum.
Scriforum. I remember I used to say that a lot back in 2011.
Like,
I was like,
Mithrigan?
What? Yeah, Mithrigan. And then Fant Forstick.
Okay. Oh, Fant Forstick was really egregious. That was pretty bad.
Guys, I'm so excited to talk about this. We have a lot to get into. So,
right.
Kicking us off with good old IMDb is me.
Hey!
Hell yeah.
So, 10 years have passed, and Sidney Prescott, who has put herself back together thanks in part to her writing, is visited by the Ghostface Killer. And... See.
Okay. Sidney Prescott or weird. Mr. Potato Head? Which I don't understand.
That's what I was saying. Have you guys seen Beetlejuice?
No.
Okay. Never mind. I'll skip it because it was like, Sidney Prescott puts herself back together, and I'm like, what is this? Oh, you know what? Hey, how about this? Who is she? Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas, dude?
Oh yeah.
That's what I was visualizing with this IMDb terrible freaking.
That's pretty bad. It's actually pretty bad.
That's not great work, honestly.
Yeah, Lego Sidney Prescott. There we go. That's the next. Lego Scream is a great concept for a movie.
Lego Scream. That's hilarious.
Ah, shit.
I'd be down.
Yeah, I'd be down too.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. this was written by Kevin Williamson and directed by the late, the great Wes Craven.
Ooh, the classic duo is back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The boys are back in town.
Mm-hmm.
Boys back down.
The disgusting brothers.
Now I want to watch A Knight's Tale. God damn it.
Oh, yeah, that. Ooh, Knight's Tale Zurg for sure.
Soon.
Yeah.
We've been saying also, this for years.
We tried to do a Bronx Tale Zurg and everybody went home. So, you know, we got to.
I was tired.
Yes, I do remember this.
Quitters.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, I was so tired I forgot my charger, which I did leave with Phil.
Which I'm actually looking at it right now. I will remember to bring it tomorrow.
Will you?
I no longer need it anymore. I'm not team iPhone anymore, so this charger is obsolete to me.
All right, fucking
I'm about to be team iPhone 16 Pro, so that charger will work for me as well.
Oh hell
I
yeah, dude!
Offering it to you, the fuck?
Just saying, Phil. If she happens to forget it again, just
iPhone 16, right? Like, as in like the increment, the centimeter amount of updates it got. Huh?
Oh, speaking of fucking Phil, my camera is broken on my phone, and I posted a video that I took. And he was like, "You mean your shitty iPhone camera?" And I was like, "Literally, it's cracked. I don't know what you mean."
Oh, hey,
stop rubbing salt on the wound.
speaking of iPhone cameras, and this is horror movie related, breaking freaking news. 28 years later filmed on an iPhone 15 Pro Max
with some attachments. Yeah.
But the attachements are like $30,000 worth of lenses and monitors and wires and cables. Right? I mean, I was like, all right, it's cool you guys are using an iPhone, but fuck, it's still gonna look like you're shooting it on a fucking red.
Right. Well, that's my thing. It's like I'm just like saying like with some attachments, like call it what it is, dude.
Like, I was like, dude, those lenses alone are like 20 G's. Stop, dude. Stop.
Stop.
Yeah.
Moving right along.
Oh yeah.
This movie is starring. This is pulled directly from Wikipedia. I have no idea why David Arquette is listed first, but it's starring David Arquette. Nev Campbell, Courtney Cox, Emma Roberts, Hayden Panettiere, Anthony Anderson, Allison Brie, Adam Brody, and Rory Culkin.
What a cast! But also, David Arquette first, Wikipedia, known also female protagonist haters Wikipedia.
I guess so. Huh?
Phil, did you write this entry? Did you put this entry in there, Phil?
I was just going to say, that article is written by me. God.
Typical. Box office information. This movie released on April 15th. 2011.
Did you guys see this in theaters?
Unfortunately, yes. No.
I remember seeing.
I was on a college trip because I was in high school when this movie came out, and we were doing a college trip, and I remember seeing the posters for it at CSU Fullerton, and I was like, "That looks dope as fuck," and I never got to see it. So.
Oh.
Was the poster of, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the poster for Scream 4, was the poster like Ghostface and the mask like forms and morphs into like a knife?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you looking it up right now?
Yeah.
I hear clicky, yeah, no, typey, typey.
I did the art also, so I wanted to confirm because they had that and they had the one that was a 4 with Sydney's face, which we posted.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Cool.
The mask with turning into the knife, that's the one I saw, and I was like, that looks spooky.
Yeah. Very cool poster. Yeah.
Yes.
Very, very, very good. Yes.
This movie had a $40 million budget, and it made $97.2 million in the box office.
That's kind of low.
We'll get into it.
Yep. All right.
COVID, dude. It took everybody out that year.
What?
Anyways, Bloodlines. anyways, dude, Bloodlines is my headline. Let's get down over here to some... what is this, a plot breakdown, I'm assuming?
No.
Yeah, right? No? Oh, no.
You got the healthy chunk of production information.
Well, if anybody knows me, I do love my healthy chunks.
Ew.
So, when it came to the right time for a new Scream entry, Wes Craven...
That was pretty bad. please, Phil.
Let me do that again.
I'm about to blow some healthy chunks after that fucking comment, dude.
Webster, you started it, dude. This is your fault.
This is your fault, Webster. Way to outline.
Anyways, Bloodlines. When it came to the right time for a new Scream entry, Wes Craven said, "You always look at it like, okay, what's the script and who's involved?" End quote. And in the case of Scream 4, the timing just so happened to be perfect.
Ooh,
perfect. Wow. I was trying to do the what is that? What video game is that? Perfect. Fucking Street Fighter. Anyway, Scream 4 was announced by the Weinstein Company. In July 2008. However, at this point, no one was attached to it, either in the directing chair or even as a screenplay. Interesting stuff here. It had been 10 years since Scream 3 and Wes Craven came on the recording saying that he would not mind directing the film if the script were as good as Scream.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
It's Scream and Scream. La, la. Anyways, Kevin Williamson, the writer of Scream 1 and 2, as well as a slew of other popular horror movies and TV shows, confirmed his return in January 2010, stating that the fourth film's production would begin during the hiatus of his show, The Vampire Diaries. Oh, I had no idea he was attached to that show.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's good. Was anybody watch that?
I fucking loved The Vampire Diaries. Oh. I was a teenager in the late, you know, 2000s, mm-hmm. early 2010s.
Yeah, my sister loved it actually too. Mm-hmm. It was one of those ones that she'd be hogging the TV. We're like, all right, Lonnie, go ahead.
This is like happening during like the vampire craze, right? Like, yeah. Twilight.
It's also like a love triangle type situation, also. So there was a lot of comparisons to Twilight, but also all like vampires who are playing high schoolers who don't look like high schoolers at all. It was a show on the CW. I don't know what.
Do they have Mexican wolves also?
They weren't Mexican, you fuck. The fucking guy. God damn it, Flinster.
Why? They got the brown wolves.
There were witches, not werewolves. Well, there were werewolves, but they came later.
All right.
Okay. Well, there you have it. All right.
Well, there you go, dude. God. Anyways, to all my listeners out there, there were no Mexican werewolves in Twilight. But there are LA Mexicans werewolves in this episode of the podcast. Okay,
yes. There are a couple LA wolves right here, baby. Let's go.
Dude, you're a fucking bear, dude. You know what? I'm a bear, dude.
You're a bear. You're the bear.
I had to look up what a bear was, you like, did? In 2024 terms, because I was called a bear recently, and I was like, yeah, dude, I'm pretty hairy and stuff. And then this woman that called me a bear, she's like, I don't mean it like that. I'm like, well, what do you mean? She's like, look it up. And I was like, and then I asked Savannah, and Savannah filled me in, and I was like, oh,
yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, if I swung that way.
I mean, if you were gay, sure, you'd be a bear.
Yeah,
total bear, dude. Total bear.
Yeah, hell yeah. And you could be my cub, Fuencerino.
Oh my God. Anyways, please keep reading.
In March 2010, it was confirmed that Craven would indeed direct after Williamson and Craven made sure that David Arquette, Neve Campbell, and the illustrious, iconic, especially with a bang, have an icon, Courtney Cox would return.
All right.
Bang, bangs, bangs, as in like the Scream 3 bangs.
I understand.
But she also bangs too, like the Ricky Martin song. She bangs, she bangs. It would be a Scream film without some... It wouldn't be a Scream film without some kind of legal issue, however. Shortly after Wes Craven was announced to return, Kathy Conrad, a producer, filed suit against the Weinsteins. All my homies hate the Weinsteins.
Right.
Fuck yeah. Fuck them, dude. Because it was allegedly in her contract with the Weinstein Company to produce all Scream movies. So, of course, they settled out of court, and it wasn't a huge deal. We just love dunking on these fucking assholes, don't we, gang?
Yeah, the more money they lose, the happier I am, for sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
She does have a producer credit in this movie, but whatever.
Okay.
I think this was the last one she got a producer credit for, because they were like, all right, we'll give you this last one.
Yeah. And also, get the fuck out of Hollywood. How about that?
So, speaking of the Weinsteins, Kevin Williamson had repeated clashes with both Bob and Harvey, resulting in them once again hiring Aaron Kruger for rewrites, and the script varied heavily from the original drafts. Wes Craven was naturally not thrilled about the changes, but was adamant that it was, quote, Kevin's script and story, end quote.
Yeah. That's the Scream 3 guy?
Aaron Kruger wrote 3 and also was listed as a producer, so...
Ay, ay, ay. That looked a little hot Weinstein mess right here. There we go, alright.
I know, already, dude. It was a precursor for many things to come. Yes. Looks like. Hayden Panettiere was also very unhappy with all the rewrites and script changes that went on during production, nearly quitting the film as a result.
I would have been so sad. She fucking kills in this movie.
I know.
She's great. Dude, she's like...
Refresh my memory. Besides, like, Heroes and, like, the Scream movies, was she, like...
She was in the second Bring It On, I want to say.
Yeah, she was straight to video. Bring It On. She was the cheerleading girl.
Yes,
She blew up in Heroes. Did anybody watch Heroes? I kind of watched a little bit of that.
I was about to say, for this movie, she was just like, well, if I can get through fucking later Hero seasons, I can get through this goddamn Scream 4. Like, that's probably going through her head right there.
She did Heroes. Nice. She did Bring It On, All or Nothing. She recently, the show ended in 2018, but she was in Nashville.
Oh, she was? Oh, shit, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so she was very much like a of my generation kind of Disney gal.
She was out of the scene for a while too, if I remember. She had like heavy postpartum depression or something. She had some kind of medical issue that took her out of the media for a while, actually.
Yeah.
She did. Yeah. I remember. She started off big. I think like Heroes was like her breakout role, right?
Yeah, she was the star, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that.
Save the trailer, save the world. That was the shit.
She was also the voice of Dot in A Bug's Life.
Oh, and Remember the Titans.
Yeah.
Oh, she was in Remember the Titans.
Dude, that's she kicks ass.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Denzel. Yeah. Let me tell you something about the Hayden Panettiere, right? She's a great actress, right? You don't say anything negative about Hayden. That's my girl. That's everyone's girl, right? We in this house, we love Hayden Panettiere. Anyways. Dude, I had like coffee. These Koji tacos, man, they got me. I don't know.
They if got your aunt, man. I can't do caffeine with this medication after
running
noon,
1,000 miles an hour. Dude, I didn't get the itis from tacos. Usually tacos will put me to sleep. I'm fucking wide awake, dude.
Now you're going Denzel levels right now, dude. That's a new level. You skip right past Kevin Hart.
I know. I'm just pumped for Scream 4, dude. It's this. Well, I can't wait to talk more about this. Anyways, let's continue. So now that we have mostly Kevin Williams in the script, they had to cast this fucking bitch, dude. In May 2010, Hayden Panettiere and Rory Culkin signed on.
Rory Culkin.
Yeah. Oh, he's killing it right now, right? With the what's it called?
No, that's Succession. That's Kieran Culkin.
That's a different Culkin.
Different Culkin.
Rory Culkin? Rory then?
He was in Signs.
Oh shit! That's him. That's right.
He was also in the movie Lords of Chaos, which was the like Euronymous and Dead stuff, like the Norwegian metal story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
So cool stuff. Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. So, cool. Shout out to Rory Culkin. Let's continue. Ashley Green of Twilight fame was offered the role of Sydney's cousin, Jill. But the role ultimately went to Emma Roberts, Eric Roberts' niece and Julia Roberts' daughter, right?
Is that true?
Yes, it is.
Hold on.
Pull that shit up.
Yeah, look that up. We're just pure verifying.
I think that's Eric Roberts' daughter and Julia Roberts'
Kelly Cunningham.
Oh, so it's Eric Roberts' daughter, right? And Julia Roberts' niece, I believe.
Oh.
Yes, if I remember
correctly. Nepo baby, there we go.
Eric Roberts and Julia Roberts are like siblings, dude.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, that's true.
You know who Eric Roberts is, right?
Maroni, bitch.
Yeah, Maroni. The Dark Knight, yeah.
Oh, I'm aware.
Yeah.
I'm aware.
Yeah. Two-bit whack job. Anyways, dude, you talk about Gotham gangsters, I'm going to start doing the Penguin right now, dude.
Yeah, don't. Do not get on the topic of Gotham, because you're going
to start talking like Colin Farrell as a Gotham mobster, dude.
God damn
it. I'm gonna do the Maroni for you right now about that film. No one wants to hear you talk.
No, can we go somewhere? I can barely hear you talk. What gives you thinking I want to hear you talk? Anyways, Eric Roberts is a fucking gangster,
Eric was
dude.
Good like, at that. He was very
he's
good.
He's fucking awesome. Anyways, Emma Roberts, the daughter, is in this role. She's playing Sydney's, cousin, right? Mm-hmm. Channeling the social media themes of Channel 4, Scream 4.
Holy
Craven
shit,
Craven took to his Twitter and asked fans to pick his role for his traditional cameo. Of course, the cameo was, however, deleted from the final cut of the film. Oh, interesting. I never see it. I want to see this now.
Yeah, he plays like a coroner. I don't know if it's I didn't
really.
Yeah. That's just all cool. Like he's credited as a coroner, so I don't know.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. All right. So, the film suffered two casting changes in quick succession as shooting had begun. Lake Bell had originally been cast as Judy Hicks, but was forced to drop out, which she announced via her Twitter account on June 24th, 2010, due to, quote, scheduling conflicts. She was replaced by Marley Shelton. 6 days later, Lauren Graham was originally cast as Kate Roberts, dropped out, also citing scheduling conflicts as well as script changes. She was, of course, ultimately replaced by Mary McDonnell.
I don't know these people. Who are these people?
Lauren Graham was in Gilmore Girls.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
She's a Gilmore gal.
She's a Gilmore gal, dude.
Dear God.
The man, the myth, the voice of Ghostface, Roger L. Jackson, returned for his entry, but is famously a pretty shy guy and didn't want to be interviewed or really, you know, be in a public figure while doing the early Scream movies, like, at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
interesting.
Low-key.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the voice of Mojo Jojo, which I learned from Powerpuff Girls.
What?
Yeah.
No shit.
Oh, that's pretty dope.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fucking awesome.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, pretty bad. We got some talent here. Nice.
Had no idea. Mm-hmm. Damn, that's fucking dude, that's crazy. I always thought, like, Ghostface's voice, like, if anything were to happen to this dude, like, you can get David Hayter to recast, you know? Like, David Hayter's got a
David
voice.
David Hayter can do it, yeah.
David Hayter can do a Ghostface voice, for sure. But, anyways, he makes, you know, speaking of our boy Roger L. Jackson, he makes appearances at horror cons now, but while filming, to make the acting more intense, Wes Craven didn't allow the actors to meet Jackson, so they wouldn't know who was on the other end of the phone during the scenes, which is fucking cool.
Yeah, that's really... I think that's cool.
That's some good directorial chops right there.
Yeah.
It really is. True to character, Hayden Panettiere even searched for Jackson every day, including 2 days where he was listed on the call sheet, but she never found him in person. That's fun. That's
I think
fun.
That's really that's fucking funny. Fun.
Detective Panettiere, cool. There you go, man.
Yeah. She was all in it, and then, like, meanwhile, Wes Craven is just, like, everyone's keeping Roger, like, hidden in a closet somewhere, right?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's like, did you put him on the call sheet? Okay, cool, they'll occupy our time for a little while. We gotta set up the lights over here.
Yep. So, of course, the secrecy would continue. At a tape read on June 25th, 2010, the actors and actresses were told to stop reading at page 75 to prevent those already cast in the film from knowing the fucking climax, dude.
Mm-hmm. Also smart.
Smart, there considering previous cool. Scream cool. films, so many leaks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Perhaps. Huh?
Oh, Scream 2, like, famously, Scream 2 the whole thing leaked, right?
Yeah, it, like, revamped how Hollywood, like, handled secrecy in... listen to our Scream 2 episode about that one. It is a huge leak.
What I said. I do remember in one of the episodes we did predict the pandemic, which I still get a chuckle out of, but...
I gotta honestly do a re-listen or something, because we've done some shit where I'm just like, wow, we were really prophetic here. Holy
season
shit.
Hold on. Seven.
Webster?
Yes.
Webster?
Yeah?
Are you responsible for COVID, dude?
I'm responsible for so many things, apparently.
Dude, it wasn't the Wuhan lab. It was you.
Aww.
You don't know about her trip to Wuhan? You don't know about her trip to Wuhan?
Hold on, dude.
You don't know about her trip to Wuhan?
Not with that.
Webster.
What?
Hang on, dude. Are you the one that fucked the bat?
You know, there's a lot of things you don't know about me, Phil.
Oh, you predicted the pandemic.
Technically. Yeah.
Interesting.
No, I didn't. Anthony did. Blame him, not me.
Okay. I wasn't prepared for a bat fucking accusation on this episode, but we're starting the season strong.
You got Alex Jones Phil on this side right here with the tinfoil hat right now, dude.
There you go.
Let me tell you something about Anthony and Alex. They're interdimensional vampires, if you ask me.
Listen, yeah. I'm a bit of a freak. I don't know how much of that is...
I thought you got that tattoo. Yes. There you go. Okay, now
I'm
we get it.
I already have a bat tattoo. Okay.
There it is, dude.
There it is, dude. Commemorate the day, dude. To commemorate. Yeah, she's just rubbing her fucking faces.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Wow.
I get it.
We're directly
under my very nose.
Under
I can't believe it, dude.
My tits.
Sure don't. Under my tits. That's how we start the episode. No, they're here. Just straight to the theme.
There we go. Where the tattoo is placed.
That works, yeah. There we go.
Yeah, in case our listeners were wondering, like, what the hell is she talking to? That's
under my tits, the tattoo. Alex Webster story. There he is.
Good. I have a stomach tattoo, and it's a bat, and that's where, for those who don't know.
What a wonderful second episode of season 7. This is great.
The one who is on crack right now.
I love how we funneled into that direction. That's good.
Let's continue here. Almost done on my part.
We're almost two lines, Phil.
I know. We're almost there. Perhaps to his detriment, this is the first Scream entry to utilize CGI. With, of course, the knife effects being done in post-production instead of the practical collapsing knife effect used in the first three films. Extensive CGI was also used for Anthony Anderson's character death scene, which Wes Craven did not tell the studio executives would be so graphic. He got inspiration from a real knife stabbing where someone was stabbed through the head and walked themselves to the ER. That's fucking awesome.
It's like a gruesome death.
Yeah.
What did he say right before he fell? He said, fuck
Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis, there it is, yeah.
Because they were talking earlier about, like, all cops die in horror movies unless they're Bruce Willis.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Anthony Anderson. Oh, I did not know about the CGI knives, though, here.
Yeah.
Good, well done.
Yeah.
Not like around this time X-Men Origins Wolverine had just come out.
Yeah.
And that movie got heavily criticized for its CGI claws. Those look terrible.
They look so bad.
And I did see that in theaters.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
I do remember seeing that in theaters, too. But I just remember seeing those claws. And I'm like, that shit looks fake as hell. Look at those terrible CGI claws. Apparently they did something similar here with Scream 4, but it's good because I didn't fucking notice. I didn't, you know.
And that's,
the best CGI is the invisible kind.
Exactly, and that's the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Precisely. Good stuff there. All right.
Anyways, all right. Fwen, take us on, dude. What you got?
We got the fucking Dream Master, baby. We are doing play-by-play time? Is it play-by-time? Uh-huh.
Yeah, it is play-by-play.
Oh, shit.
All right.
Okay. Oh, you and I are taking this on. Okay, here we go, dude. I'm back.
Nice. All right. Well,
we're so back.
We are so absolutely right here, definitely. Mm-hmm. On the 15th anniversary week of the original Woodsboro murders, high school students Jenny Randall and Marnie Cooper are murdered by Ghostface. In a very, very meta-ass opening kill, I would say, for sure. Yeah, that was...
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
that one was... I remember when theaters, I was like, just fucking... Who's the real people?
It was pissing me off. Like,
I was a little mad. Yeah, I'm like, come on, once or twice, but like, we were like four fucking times.
Yeah,
I really wanted Kirsten Bell in this bitch.
Yeah.
Wait, who was it? Kirsten Bell and it was Anna Paquin?
Yeah, Anna Paquin.
Yeah, Anna Paquin.
Nice. Anyways, after the cameo fest, Sydney Prescott returns to Wordsboro the following day to promote her self-help book. Much like many self-help, that's started in this era for sure. Okay. So, after evidence is found in her rental car, Sydney becomes a prime suspect in the murders and must stay in town until they are solved. All right.
That's, honestly, I will say, like, in the grand scheme of things, that's such, like, a lazy, like, it's like, no, you have to stay in town until we get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
The chances of you being the killer, slim, but not zero.
It's like, but, you know, we got this little nugget here, and this nugget means you should get a hotel. Anyways, Sydney's teenage cousin, Jill Roberts, who is coping with the infidelity of her ex-boyfriend, Trevor Sheldon, gets a threatening phone call from Ghostface, as does her friend, Olivia Morris. Jill and Olivia, alongside their friend, Kirby Reed, fucking Hayden Panteri right there, baby, are questioned about their calls by Dewey, while his deputies Judy Hicks, Anthony Perkins, and Ross Haas assist him in the case. And
Ross,
I gotta say,
Ross is really funny.
Ross is Wait, so Ross Haas, that's our boy Adam Brody. Brody's...
Oh, yeah.
Dude, we need another Brody sense, all right? Like, he's such a good actor.
He's a very good actor.
I really like Adam Brody, actually.
He also just ages like a fine wine, which I love for me, personally.
Does he still look the same?
Yeah.
He's been in the game a while, yeah. I also like Judy Hicks. I think she's actually a really good character in this movie. I don't know why.
She annoys the shit out of me, but go off.
I know. I love her character. I think her annoyingness is kind of endearing, actually.
That's fair.
Yeah. And, of course, Anthony Anderson is always great. Pookie, let's burn this motherfucker down.
Come on, Pookie.
Come on, Pookie.
Burn this motherfucker down. It's like, you know what's in there? Semen. Animal semen. Dude,
Hell,
Anthony Anderson's Yeah, what's he up to these days, Anthony Anderson? He's I see him in commercials and stuff like that.
I know, dude, but I will always remember him in Romeo Must Die just being like, Romeo Dim Must Sum, Die. Dim Sum.
Put some nuts in your mouth.
So I knew he did Black-ish, and then
oh yeah,
that he mainly has transitioned to like a lot of TV stuff.
I think he's been playing a dad recently.
He's in his dad era.
He is.
Good for him. Good for him. Anthony Anderson was the shit for a while.
I've always liked Anthony Anderson. I remember him from Me, Myself, and Irene. And yes. Romeo Must Die. Dude, fucking Me, Transformers.
Transformers, but.
Yeah. Transformers,
that's right. Me, Myself, and Irene, though. Fuck, that was right.
And Irene, that's a good one. He's good in that, too.
We got a good cast here. All right.
There you go. Good cast.
Yes, anyways, well, Sydney herself is then confronted by Ghostface, and they fight until Ghostface is forced to flee when Perkins and Haas arrive. So, okay, we get Ghostface action pretty early on. It's nice.
Very early, yeah.
Yes, now at the hospital, Sydney fires her publicist after learning of her desire to exploit the murders to increase book sales. She's subsequently murdered by Ghostface at a parking lot garage, where it is again one of my also former wives,
Allison Brie.
Fucking love Allison Brie. Oh my, Community. Community just made me a fan.
Mad Men. She was a. Yeah. I'm a big Mad Men fan.
I don't know what it is. I have Allison Brie face blindness. Every time I see her in something, I don't realize it's her until someone points it out.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
I don't know. I'm
She was a. I saw that movie that she was in recently with last year with John Cena. Funny. It was funny.
Oh, wait.
But it was,
she
it
was
like
movie
one of those.
John Cena?
Yeah, it was one of those action rom-com movies, kind of like that Sandra Bullock does. It was fun.
I see.
Freelance.
Not it's unlike good. The action movie with John Cena and Awkwafina right now.
That's the Amazon one too.
I did see the trailer.
I haven't seen that yet.
I don't know, man. I have zero interest in that. Probably because Awkwafina's in it. But...
That's fair. That's honestly valid. And
but then again, John Cena, dare I say, he's getting to that. I don't know. I hope he doesn't get to that level of Awkwafina level.
Of what, obnoxious?
I still think he's hilarious.
He's great. Know. I guess, I can share this. Yeah, it's out. It's already out. Dude, he's going to be in the Matchbox movie.
What?
Yeah, he's gonna be so Mattel is their next big cinematic venture, will be Matchbox, and it's gonna be directed by Chris Hargrave, who gave us two incredible action films in Extraction 1 and 2 with Hemsworth, and this is being produced by Tom Cruise's company. What's it called? Skydance. And
Phil, this news dropped 3 days ago. All right.
Yeah,
I can say this now. I've actually kind of known this, but I can say
it now.
Okay,
that's because someone, I'm not going to name names, works at one of the affiliated
companies. I was hyped, and I was like, oh, fuck, dude, Cena's going to be in this movie? Sick. Am I going to see him here at HQ someday? Fuck yeah.
Damn.
Obviously, I can't. I won't be able to see him, but, you know.
Right.
If I spot him on campus, that'd be cool.
A floating suit.
You're like, give me an F you please.
That'd be freaking awesome.
Can you just punch me in the face, please?
I'm lying down. Five knuckle shuffle, please.
Just one five knuckle shuffle, please.
Wow, we got a little tangent there. All right. Gail enlists the help of two high school movie fanatics, Charlie Walker and Robbie Mercer. Charlie theorizes that the killer is following the rules of horror movie remakes, and Gail and Sydney conclude that the killer will likely strike at the Stabathon, a screening party held in a barn where teenagers gather to binge watch all 7 movies of the Stab franchise.
It sounds really fun.
It does. This kind of feels the most 2011 kind of thing to me. To be honest with you, it feels like, because this is, you know, back when you would have to do movie midnight showings at midnight and things like that. Mm-hmm. The movie fandom was kind of really at its peak at this time, and this captures that tremendously.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah,
I would say
We lived it. We lived it, Phil.
We were there.
Phil, it is your turn.
It is my turn.
It's time. Let's go.
All right, here we go. So, Gail sneaks into the party to investigate, but Ghostface attacks her, stabbing her in the fucking shoulder.
No!
Haas and Perkins were assigned to guard Jill's house, and who are also ultimately murdered.
Mm-mm.
And this is, of course, where Sydney discovers through another taunting call from Ghostface that Jill has left for Kirby's before Ghostface attacks her and Kate, killing the latter.
Oh, no.
Mm. Damn. People be getting capped now. Yeah, this is a gruesome kill with Anthony this Anderson. That was, that was gross. Gross, but
probably the hardest one, dude.
Yeah.
Either Anthony Anderson's or the one in the beginning where there was like a bed. Somebody was thrown in bed. And there was like a brutal killing there.
Olivia. What's her face? Is that her name?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, in the beginning, she's got
brutally
guts
killed. Yeah, she was brutally killed too, almost like a kind of like a Casey.
Scream One,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Drew Barrymore,
kind of kind of like that. Anyways, this is of course where Jill, Kirby, Charlie, Robbie, and Trevor arrive for an after party at Kirby's house when Ghostface strikes. Kirby? Did I say Kirby?
You said
I'm
Kirby.
I'm so sorry. I'm in Kirby's house. Kirby's house when Ghostface strikes, killing a drunken Robbie.
Aw, poor Robbie.
Mm-hmm. Sydney arrives to leave with Jill, but they are both chased by Ghostface.
Man, Kirby was just trying to get laid in this whole fucking thing. I felt bad for her.
You know, 2011 Phil would have been more than happy to help her in that situation.
You had the same level of film nerddom as the person she was fucking targeting, too. You could have done it.
I think so, yeah.
I don't know. Rory Culkin has a very particular, like, creepy look about him that unfortunately high school me would have been immune to.
Oh,
yeah.
But Phil also has a creepy look about him as well. So it works out.
Hold on, dude. I was nerdy as fuck, just like these guys in high school, but I was still the suave dude that I am now. You know, shit.
That was Cub Phil, dude. That was Cub Phil, not Bear Phil. Cub Phil.
Absolutely not.
I haven't lost my touch, dude. Anyways, Sydney arrives to leave with Jill, but they're chased by Ghostface. All right, this is where we left off. And as Sydney calls Dewey and tries to find Jill, Kirby frees Charlie, who was bound and gagged, but he ultimately stabs her, revealing himself as Ghostface before leaving her to bleed out.
Womp, womp.
What an asshole.
I bleed it out, digging deeper, just to throw. Anyway, Sydney is confronted. Oh. Sydney is confronted by Charlie and get this, guys, a second fucking Ghostface.
No, how could this be? There's never two of them.
Mm-hmm. And this is revealed to be Jill.
Oh no.
She admits to masterminding the murders out of jealousy from the fame that Sydney received for surviving the previous killing sprees and desires to achieve clout as a pseudo-victim of the murders, intending to frame Trevor as Ghostface.
It's the worst Prescott.
Okay.
This is very much like the "Damn, you got me monologuing."
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Just lays it all out. Like, I'm just like, wow, okay, wait a minute.
They might as well just had like a whole entire flashback sequence in black and white where like we fade in, like there's like a fade in transition from Jill into like the scenario. It's like in black and white or something. Like it should have just.
Well, yeah. I mean, she might as well have just looked at the camera and was like, it should have been me.
This is the part that doesn't feel very Kevin Williamsy. I think that might be the other guy.
I remember watching this in 2011 and I was like, okay, here we go. This is getting part four itis right here. So Jill kills Trevor and betrays Charlie, stabbing him to death to pin him as Trevor's accomplice so she can be the sole survivor. Damn. She then stabs Sydney and injures herself to frame Trevor even further. And this is, of course, where Dewey and the police arrive as Sydney and Jill are taken to the hospital after discovering that Sydney had survived. An enraged Jill, kind of a tongue twister, goes to her hospital room and makes a final attempt to kill her. But Sydney, being that bad bitch that she is, she fights back.
Fuck yeah.
I do love the acting, actually, when that Dewey's just like, oh, she might actually make it. And then Jill kind of like has to wince a little bit, like, fuck. Yeah. No, that's cool, man. Where's she staying? Like, fuck. I gotta say, you can't get up. You can't, like, say hi or anything. Well, what if when I feel better, though? She'd probably still be there, right? Like, like just the little excuse. Like, you can, I love what you can tell the wheels are spinning in her head. That's good acting to me. Actually, I thought that was pretty nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good. Dewey, Gale, and Judy intervene after Dewey learns she is the killer because Jill somehow knew exactly where Gale was stabbed. Dewey's a fucking homie, dude.
Classic. Mm-hmm.
Classic slip up, dude. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Give her the painkiller. Mm-hmm. She's going to fuck up. Club it. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Jill subdued.
This is Michael Fassbender in Inglourious Basterds when he puts the wrong three fingers up. That's it right there.
I've got to rewatch that one. That's a classic movie right there. Huh.
I'd like to rewatch you if you know what I'm saying. What the but Jill subdues Dewey and
No more Cody talkies for him. That's Bearfield coming out, dude.
Anyways, Jill subdues. Oh, I'm about to call her right now in my penguin voice. But yeah, I just had these Koji tacos. You gotta come over. Anyways, Jill subdues Dewey and Judy and holds Gale at gunpoint. But Sydney incapacitates. Decapitate. But Sydney incapacitates Jill with a defibrillator and ultimately kills her by shooting her in the fucking heart.
Hell yeah.
Dewey calls in all police units as reporters outside erroneously name Jill as the sole surviving hero.
Hmm. And that's the thing about reboots. Never fuck with the original.
I love that. that line.
I actually like this whole last sequence quite a bit. Like, I don't know why. Yeah. It definitely feels screamy here after the whole, mustache twirling from Jill before. Like, this is this is definitely more Craven-y.
It was getting a little silly right there with the whole Jill stuff and mustache twirling perfectly well used right there, Fwen. Good job. Yeah. Every time I think of that scene, like, just don't fuck with the original, it makes me think of, like, when Randy was like, careful, this is where the killer mixes one last pop or whatever, and then Billy, he's like, ah! And then Sydney shoots him in the head and she just goes, not in my movie. I thought that was like a little callback to that.
Yeah, oh, totally. Oh,
that's great, yeah. Now, if she would have decapitated Jill, that actually would have been different, like you said earlier.
Oh, hell yeah.
Definitely wouldn't have come back. Or that would have been a weird scene.
That would have been hot.
Okay.
Chops off the blood, hangs the head over so that she can drink the blood. That's fucking...
This is Night Stalker Phil? What's going on?
This is barbaric Sidney Prescott, dude. 11th century barbaric Sidney Prescott.
That's funny. Anyways. Okay.
Anyway, moving right along to the final chapter. Scream 4 was released in North America on April 15th, 2011, and grossed $38.2 million in the United States and Canada, and $59 million in other territories for a gross total, or for a total gross, it's a disgusting total. for a gross of $97.2 million against its $40 million budget. It made $8.7 million on Friday and $19.3 million on its opening weekend, finishing second somehow at the box office behind Rio. The film's opening weekend was considered, quote, disappointing, experiencing the third lowest opening of a Scream franchise overall.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
So, it could be worse. It's not the sixth one. On Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds an approval rating of 60% based on 190 reviews, with an average score of 5.8 out of 10. The website's critical consensus reads, quote, "The franchise is showing its age, but Scream 4 is undeniably an improvement over its predecessor, with just enough meta humor and clever kills."
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. We got takes, obviously. Says we the got takes.
Gallery. I think, you might be surprised by mine. Roger Ebert gave the film 2 out of 4 stars, criticizing the film for using the cliched formula of the slasher genre, but complimenting Craven's direction and Williamson's dialogue, which I think is super funny because Scream made the cliched formula. Like, I think they get to use it. Lisa Kennedy from the Denver Post stated that Scream 4, quote, plays plenty of homage to their 1996 original, unquote, but that it is not as close to its greatness, despite calling it, quote, a cut above most other slasher flicks. I always, like, the reviews for this were very, like, back and forth, because it was just like, you know, it's not as good as a Scream movie could be, but it's better than all the other ones. Like, I'm like, all right.
I remember reading a lot of these and being like, I don't know. Like I was still hyped about the movie, but yeah, it was one of those things where the reviews and the box office, I was like, did people not get the fucking... I don't know. It was a weird time, 2011, for sure.
Yeah.
Empire gave the film 2 out of 5 stars, criticizing the film's old-fashioned formula and lack of scare factor. Insane. And finally, the New York Daily News thought the film was, quote, dated, and that, quote, relying on obvious cliches doesn't seem ironic anymore, just easy, unquote.
Interesting. What are shit talkers over here? All right.
On Letterboxd, Scream 4 boasts 365,000 reviews with an average rating of 3.3 out of 5 stars.
That's a lot of fucking reviews.
That is a ton of reviews.
What the hell?
Yeah. Aaron with 5 stars. No cops at Pride, just Sidney Prescott and her defibrillator.
Defibrillator.
There we go. Sam with 3.5 stars. Would totally watch Robert Rodriguez's Stab franchise, TBH.
Honestly, yeah. Same. I thought when I saw it, I'm just like, I can see that working.
That's really funny.
I can see that
also,
working.
Fun fact, he actually directed all the clips that are shown from Stab.
That does feel a little Rodriguez-y. Okay.
Isn't that fun?
All right.
Awesome. Yeah.
I love that. Fucking... I really did that.
Speaking of, I rewatched From Dusk Till Dawn, but I got a VHS copy over the weekend.
Whoa.
And I threw it on my VCR TV combo.
That
it looks
why you
fucking
were posting
awesome.
About it?
Yeah, actually, me and Savannah made a little funny video of me watching the iconic Selma Hayek snake dance scene. And I'm just over there watching closely while Savannah films me. And I'm just like, and I just look into the camera. I'm like, hell yeah. Yeah.
Very silly. Moving right along, Lex with 3.5 stars. I'm sorry, I skipped one. Dan with no rating. Me in a horror film about to be killed. I'm gay! Unquote. Which, same. And then Lex with 3.5 stars. Ah, yes. Once again, Emma Roberts plays a bitch I can't stand. Unquote.
Oh, that fit your tone perfectly. That was great.
I'm not really familiar with, like, her. I know who she is. I just don't know, like, is she known for other roles that people hate?
Yeah, she was in American Horror Story. She played a bitch in that. She was also in the show Scream Queens, which she played a bitch in that. You see where there's a
gotcha.
there's a
pattern.
Agent knows how to get the good money. Mm-hmm. Agent knows how to get the good money. Yeah, absolutely.
She's gonna play to type. And because I'm not totally biased here, here's a 1.5 star review from Dirk H. I guess, read by Phil, because I did read this in his voice.
Oh my goodness. Okay, what am I so? All right. Here we go. This is read by me. Quote. Oh my god. They, like, totally reinvented and modernized the franchise because they added webcams and blogs and stuff. Totally wicked.
Yeah.
That's a good... Okay. Yeah.
As I read that, because I heard it more like, oh my god, they, like, totally reinvented and modernized the franchises because they added, like, webcams and blogs and stuff. Totally wicked. That's how I read it.
To be fair, I actually read it as a penguin voice. I read it as a penguin voice.
Oh my god. They, like, totally reinvented and modernized the franchise because they added webcams and blogs and all that shit. Totally wicked, yeah.
Yes.
Don't encourage this one.
No, that was good.
Colin Farrell, if you for some reason get tired, if you're listening, if you're tired of playing that role, I will be more than happy to take on that role. Put me
if
in a
Colin
suit.
Colin Farrell
every day.
Is listening, we have bigger problems.
Yes. Good.
Please don't listen to our Fright Night music. Review. Not our Fright Night review remake versus OG Colin. Mm-hmm. We didn't mean it.
I forgot what we said. I remember I was a fan of it. You guys didn't like Colin Farrell on Fright Night, huh?
I did.
Or
no,
did
I think we did.
I think Colin Farrell plays a very hot vampire.
Yeah.
See? There we go. Thanks, listener. So, My title says The Return of Michael Myers. Okay, interesting.
I want to see where this goes. Whatever. Why did you get that, dude?
I know.
Because initially fucking... you were going to get it, but then I was like, no, it'd be really funny if I didn't.
What a fucking nightmare, dude.
I like how we both did this in our own episodes. It's great. So, in the years since its release, many have credited Scream 4 with foreshadowing the effects of social media on today's youth and the extreme lengths they go to achieve internet fame.
Her what's-her-face's monologue, I was just like, wow, like, or Jill's monologue, like, I was just like, oh, wow, like, this could be about TikTok in the year of our Lord 2024, but, all
absolutely, right. Yeah, and they were doing it with, like, iPhone 11s and shit,
they were using iOS, like, 4.
But prior to the release of Scream 4, Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson both stated that its success would lead to a fifth and sixth film. Now, of course, Williams stated in January 2010 that he was contracted to write a fifth film in addition to a fourth, or to the fourth one, actually. Now, of course, following the underperformance of the film at the box office, doubts were cast on the possibility of future films in Scream. No.
Yeah.
Now, of course, in 2015, MTV began airing the anthology television series spinoff of the franchise, although none of the cast or crew from the films were involved. But I do remember the Hype Machine. The Hype Machine was pretty heavy.
I watched the first season for sure.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Really? Oh, how was it?
I liked it.
Oh, yeah, you know what? You and my sister are in the same fucking era because she loved that shit too. And Vampire Diaries. She watched the same fucking things back to back. Wow.
Did she watch Teen Wolf?
Probably. I think I was already...
It's all MTV type shit.
Yeah, it's all MTV shit. Yeah. But of course, in June 2015, Bob Weinstein, when asked about the possibility of film continuation after Scream 4, denied the possibility of a fifth installment or any further continuation of the film franchise, citing the MTV series as the right place for the franchise. And again, we just hate our fucking Weinstein, don't we? Yeah. Now, before we go forward, kids, we need to paint a picture of what 2015 looked like for us nerds. That's right. In January 2015, Leonard Nimoy passed away at 83. Mm. And then in May 2015, Christopher Lee died at 93. Oh, man, I got to relive that one. That was a tough time.
Yeah.
I remember.
Shitty year. Oh,
that was. Yeah. And then, to insult to injury of a very shitty year, on August 30th, 2015, after quietly fighting brain cancer for 3 years, Wesley Earl Craven passed away at the age of 76 in his home. Scream 4 was his last film. And that I remember being quite a day. I was posting all over again as a horror, somebody who grew up on horror, like since my youth. We all felt that one. That was big. Now John Carpenter wrote on Twitter, quote, "Devastated to hear the news. Wes was a great friend, fine director, and good man. Great loss." And later on Facebook, quote, "My friend Wes left us too soon. He was truly an old school director. I had a great time directing him, and I'm really gonna miss him." And
isn't that sad?
That is sad, because they really came up and like brought horror to the contemporary audience.
They're like the greats, like capital T, capital G, the greats. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen to our episode early on. John Carpenter, we covered his whole rise, but then we covered Wes Craven's rise too, and we did
Last House on the Left,
and you see a lot of parallels in their journey, and you can tell like they really defined horror from fucking decades before and redefined it again, which is nice. Like, really,
I've been saying this for years, but I always see those two as like the horror version of Francis Ford Coppola and Spielberg, or like a Francis Coppola and like a Brian De Palma, or
Spielberg and Lucas, you know, like
Spielberg and Lucas. I always see like a horror versions of like those two, because I mean, especially Craven, dude. Craven fucking elevated the game in so many ways.
Yeah. Craven was able to reinvent so well. Like, absolutely. And I actually have one of his films on my potential birthday list. So we might have to, it'll be a different one, though.
Yeah.
Very, very different. But Neve Campbell said in the statement, quote, "We lost a great deal of magic yesterday. I'm devastated to hear of Wes's passing. My life wouldn't be what it is without him. I will be forever grateful for his brilliant direction, his wicked sense of humor, and his consummate kindness and friendship." He has entertained us all for decades and inspired so many to follow in his path. I loved Wes dearly and will miss him always. Thank you, Wes. With many exclamation points. But that's that one, that actually fucking makes me sad too, because she really, like, he changed her life.
Totally.
And man,
a lot of actors said that about him, about how like, they like he made their careers.
I mean, if you've listened to any of, again, of our previous stuff we talk about, Wes is also an entertaining guy, and he seemed to be like one of those guys that really had a strong value system, from what I can tell.
Totally.
Yeah. So, and of course, William Friedkin said, "Quote: To be clear, film for film, Wes Craven was the best horror director ever, and he did it with a sense of humor." Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's really, like, I had the cream of the crop when it came to picking, like, people paying homage to him for this. Like, I was just like, I could literally have pages and pages of just so many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how foundational he was, and just being a good person. Like, being those two things is not always easy, you know? You get a lot of assholes that are innovators, but he did both.
All of the interviews that I watched and, like, just watching him talk, like, you could just tell he was a good guy.
Yeah, definitely. Over the years, absolutely. Now, of course, dozens of friends and coworkers flocked to the internet to express their gratitude and how loved the horror director was, including Robert Englund, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Eli Roth, Seth Green, Gerard Way, Joe Hill, and Jamie Kennedy.
To name a few.
Yes. The Walking Dead canceled their airing of the show the day of his death to pay respect, and a later episode of MTV Scream was dedicated to Wes Craven as well. And of course, although star Neve Campbell had expressed doubt over more installments, David Arquette voiced his desire to have a fifth film to pay homage to Craven, which, you know, I'm glad they went that direction, even if we all feel mixed about these movies. Of course, we'll talk about Scream 5 another day, though. But until then, Paramount Pictures released a behind-the-scenes featurette before the release of the fifth entry in the franchise titled For Wes. So until then, For Wes, baby. Let's fucking go. I was always dreading this episode for this particular part because, goddamn, Wes Craven, he's the fucking man. Just the man.
Dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's really no one quite like him, and I don't think there ever will be.
No. Probably not in our generation for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he's always, and of course, we're going to talk more about Wes, I'm sure, coming up. Or do you want to just go now while we're in the mood?
One of the questions was, what are your favorite Wes Craven films? Like, talking about Wes Craven. Like, let's dive into it.
Let's do it. Because, I mean, honestly, like, just as a thing, we've been covering Wes Craven for a long time. And every time we come to his movies, I'm always fucking excited. Mm-hmm. Because all his movies, even if they're not hits, even if they're kind of like, I don't remember that one, like, they bring something to the table that will keep you glued to your fucking seat. Every single one of them. Even the weird ones. Like, I love it. He had such a style to his work.
You can say Red Eye. It's okay.
Oh, fuck. Okay, I forgot about Red Eye. Fuck. Most of his movies.
Red Eye was pretty fucking awesome, though.
I didn't like Red Eye that much. I was fine with Red Eye until Cillian Murphy with a fucking scarf and, like, his fucking little hole in his throat.
I didn't like it when I saw it as a teenager, but I watched it again a couple years ago, and I was like, this movie's not bad. It's not bad.
I will say underserved Wes Craven movie that we are going to cover one day, Vampire in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
Vampire in Brooklyn is really good. Have you guys ever seen People Under the Stairs? Hip-hop group. There is a very popular West Coast LA hip hop group called People Under the Stairs.
That's right.
That was my first introduction to that name, right? And in high school, I didn't know it was a Wes Craven film. And later in life, I was like, oh, is this where the rap group got their name from? And then I watched the movie. People Under the Stairs came out like in the early 90s, like 92 or something like that, 91
very,
or something like that.
And dude,
it's a great fucking movie. Heavily underrated when we talk about Wes Craven films. Man, I might just throw that in my birthday month, man.
Honestly, dude, fucking toss it, because I actually haven't seen that since the 90s.
It's a very, very good underrated Wes Craven film, dude. I might just do it. We'll see.
I mean, if you look at this filmography right here, Last House on the Left, Hills Have Eyes, Swamp Thing, Nightmare on Elm Street, fucking People Under the Stairs, New Nightmare, Vampire in Brooklyn, Scream, Red Eye, Like, he just... Bro, like, who could, in their entire filmography, like, do shit like that?
I'm not even gonna lie to you, dude. I had no idea he directed Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome. I remember seeing that as a kid, and I thought the comics were pretty fucking cool, and there was a cartoon series based off of it. Once again, a cartoon series based off of, like, a rated R movie.
That's right.
Or I think this is, like, PG, I think. I don't know, PG-13 or something like that, but it was pretty violent. But I had no idea Wes Craven directed Swamp Thing. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Had no idea. Do you remember Wishmaster? All right, yes. I just pulled up his filmography right now. Wishmaster, I remember seeing that as a kid. That was pretty fucking scary. I was scared of that demon guy.
Me too. Absolutely. Yeah. Same thing.
Special effects makeup on that person.
He didn't direct that, did he?
He's probably involved in it in some way. I'm sure it was a Wes Craven Presents kind of thing, because I don't think he directed it.
Probably. He's not listed as a director, I don't think, for that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he might have produced on it, though.
Definitely. Yeah, see, even then, he just, like, had his hand in other parts of horror that really, really are foundational, for sure. Like,
I was not a big fan of Cursed. I remember seeing that with my uncle, and we're both like, ugh. But yeah, Christina Ricci, though, so that was cool.
Ah, yeah, there you go. That's true.
Like, okay. Yeah.
What about you, though, Webster? Your thoughts on Craven's films?
I mean, I wouldn't be here as a horror fan before you today if it wasn't for Wes Craven.
Absolutely.
Scream, like, even before I was, like, a horror fan, I was a Scream fan. Like, first and foremost, I am a I am a Scream fan first and American second. I have nothing but respect for him as a director. He seems like someone who was and continues to be held up as a very respected director, and I don't think, especially in, like, the 80s and 90s, you come to that level of accolade unless you're genuinely, like, a well-liked person. And so I think, yeah, he's one of the greats and always will be, and he just seems like such a cool dude. I love the Scream movies, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, of course. As much as I talk shit about A Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one's a bit of a banger.
Yeah, it's a total banger, absolutely.
So there's a lot to say about him, but yeah, his work is just obviously, like, why I'm here as a horror fan today, so.
Definitely, I will say, you know, my favorite Wes Craven film is Scream, for sure. Scream 1.
For sure.
But you gotta think, like, you know, before that, I was also a total Freddy boy as well. So, no matter what, Craven found a way to stay top of his game as things moved along. Even then, when you discover Craven's earlier work, you're like, holy fuck, he went brutal in Last House on the Left. He went brutal.
Yeah.
Like, he pushed... Exactly. And, you know, and people were willing to give him... Such a nice guy was thinking some heinous shit, and people still loved him for it. He was a good man.
Yeah.
With a lot of creativity.
A lot of the feedback, but a lot of, like, people talking about his work was just, like, Wes really liked to pull horror out of real life. And I think that's part of the thing, one of the things that made him so effective as a director.
Yeah, his work alone, his creations, like, reached, like, his art really spoke for him. Like, I didn't really even know what he looked like until, like, I was, like, in high school, but I knew the name already.
Yes.
Like, he was such an icon. Like, rappers would throw him, his name on verses, you know? Like,
they would. That's absolutely true.
Like, for sure, like, I was like, because I remember, like, I got into hip-hop at a super young age, and I'm like, who the fuck is Wes Craven? And I keep hearing that name and all these songs sprinkled in all these songs, and then I started watching horror films, and I'm like, oh, shit, even when I was a kid, he's like, Wes Craven. I'm like, who the fuck is this Wes Craven guy? And then, like, you know, I got older and then I found out.
Honestly, I feel like as long as I've been, like, cognizant of film in general, I've known who Wes Craven is. Him and John Carpenter, I'm like, oh, they're the horror directors. I don't watch horror movies, but they're the horror directors. Like,
yeah,
they're the guys.
Yeah,
they are the guys. Absolutely. Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, pour one out. I can't drink because of the medication, but I'll tell you, I'd pour one out for Wes right now.
Hell yeah.
I'll go find one of my Dr. Peppers or something. Just pour it on the carpet. It's fine. He deserves it. I can clean the carpet. It'd be good.
Absolutely. I'm about to rewatch Swamp Thing, man. I did not know
you were about to slap on people under the stairs, be honest. Or Vampire in Brooklyn.
Vampire in Brooklyn fucks. Dude, that movie's great. Vampire in Brooklyn is really good.
Let's move right along. Pour one out tonight for Wes Craven, everyone.
For my boy Craven, that's right.
Mm-hmm. But we are here to talk about Scream 4. So I am curious, because we've kind of avoided giving away our thoughts, feels, concerns about Scream 4. So I'm very curious. Phil, let's start with you. What are your
thoughts? All right, for sure. Yeah, praising the dude, praising the artist. But yeah, this movie's all right. It's okay. It's not my favorite Scream movie. But I did think it was like better. I remember we ranked them in our Scream 6 episode when we reviewed them. I just don't remember where I ranked Scream 4, but I think it was somewhere in the early ones, because I'm just not a fan of these new ones. But that's just me. But I would say that I think Scream 4 is better than like 3. Mm-hmm. If I remember my ranking, I think it goes 1, 2, 4, I believe, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, this one was cool. I do like the twist, the new takes. I remember like watching this in theaters. I enjoyed it, and then there was like something happened in the middle where I kind of started, it kind of lose me. It was losing me, and then it brought me back towards the climax. And like the last 10 minutes I was in, felt like classic Scream again. It was cool. And I enjoyed this movie. Yeah, it was cool. It's just not as, I think it stuck to the formula a whole lot more as compared to like the newer films like 5 and 6. Mm. But yeah. And sticking to a formula, there's nothing wrong with sticking to a formula when it's your fourth movie. You know, it's not like Ghostface Takes Manhattan or anything, you know? I applaud 6 for trying to go to New York, taking it out of Woodsboro.
Unlike Jason Takes Manhattan, they actually went to Manhattan.
Yeah.
They did spend a little more time
there. They weren't on a fucking boat for like 45 minutes.
God. Go listen to last week's episode for more of confusions about why we're not, why aren't we there yet?
Why don't we get to the fireworks factory?
It's funny.
Anthony, your thoughts on Scream 4?
Pretty good. Like, honestly, like, I think this movie took a little while to get going. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem like as tight an adherence to, as the previous movies. Each of the first three, I think, were, even despite 3 being kind of like a weird movie, it's still pretty well paced. Mm-hmm. You know, so this one seems a little sloggy comparatively, but I would say it definitely finishes very strong. And the characters are actually really good. They were better this time seeing it than I remembered, which is nice. And the fact that they get killed in such gruesome ways, I'm just like, oh, see, this is why, you know, Craven was such a master. He really does make you care enough that when somebody gets murked, you're like, ah, I have empathy, and now they got fucking rocked. Totally. Like, that happens a lot in this movie. Mm-hmm. And he knows who to keep alive. He knows who to keep alive, which is good.
Yeah.
He's very, very, very good about that. So, yeah, I think that my big takeaway from this particular screening was they really did, for 2011, call a lot of good stuff that was going to happen. And that just shows how smart the filmmakers were behind this. They can definitely see where things were going, and they commented on it enough. I don't think they realized just how far and outlandish and crazy social media would take over things, so they weren't quite there yet. They had like the webcams and the live shows and things, and like, but it's still, there's still some rudimentary aspects of it where if this movie was made maybe 2 years later, it would be, I think, a more refined version of this story.
Yeah,
because they'd have more to draw from.
There's an unironic usage of the word "the net" in this movie. So.
Yes, yes, because that's like, they're so close to me. Like, this movie's on the cusp of being like such a prophetic foretelling of everything. Mm. It still does it, but it does it just a little out of touch.
Yeah,
it's a slight bit out of touch. Again, another 2 years.
But I'm out of my head when he's not around. One's out of touch. He's out of time. But he can't.
Tomorrow, guys.
That's good. Tomorrow, don't worry. That's right.
That's literally
or tonight when this bitch drops.
I know.
There you go.
That's so funny.
Oh, that's good. No, yeah, but honestly, like, even despite that, it's good. It's very, very good. it really stands on its own compared to the ones after it and the ones before. There's not neither of those different styles of film are like this mm-hmm. one. Even if it does adhere to the early to the Scream formula, it still feels pretty distinct. And I think that it's just being a 2011 movie. Like 2011 was a very weird transitional time, and it reflects that very well. So,
absolutely,
not bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Webster? What'd you think?
I fucking love this movie. No, I think I'm like the perfect demographic for this movie. I completely understand the criticisms of it because I also have them too. I don't know what it is. I think maybe these are all like actors that I watched growing up, so I'm really familiar with them. Like, this is a freaking packed cast. It's very like on the nose in like a perfect way for me. That really just like, I think answers a lot of questions, or not a lot of questions, but answers a lot of thoughts that I had about the first three. Like, Kirby is such, like, if I could have created a character to put into the Scream franchise, it would have been Kirby.
Oh.
Like, so I think that this movie is just, like, it's so much fun. The critiques about it being a little out of touch is absolutely valid and makes total sense. And I have them, too. I also, for what Phil was saying about the scenes, like, it, like the last 45 minutes, that first 20 minutes of it is like a little rough.
It's a little Scooby-Doo. It's a little Scooby-Doo.
Very Scooby-Doo-y, very like, oh, like you got me monologuing ass. Like,
yeah.
there is like, I want to say four or five scenes that I clocked while I was watching it that I was like, here's how I would have shaved 5 minutes off of this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like there's a lot of scenes where I'm just like, how, like, I can see how this could have been clipped just a touch, not much, but just a touch, because they dragged in a way that I don't know if it was necessary.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, as you guys know, I'm such a diehard Scream fan.
Bro.
Aside from 6, I have not been disappointed by 1.
That's true. And I'm also a stand for 5 as well, so
yeah, you know, I liked 5. I know Phil wasn't a huge 5 fan, but 6 is the only one that I truly like. I walked out of, and I was just like, I walked out of 6 like, you know, like,
guys, it's totally fine to be incorrect. You know, the two of you guys are 5 and 6 stands, and, you know, dude, it's all right to be wrong. You know, it's all right to have negative wrong
opinions. Don't call me a 6 stand, all right? Yeah, that is an insult.
That is an insult to everything I am. But, no, I love 4. I think it's really fun. I think it plays on a lot of the, like, I really like how they played up the Stab franchise and gave 7 of them in the time, in, like, the 10 years.
I know.
Yeah.
I think it's also really refreshing to see, like, I think the fact that they were able to get David Arquette, Courtney Cox, and Neve Campbell for this, like, made the movie. It was almost like a transitional film because it was like a passing of the torch to younger teenagers to get killed.
Yeah.
So, I'm a fan. I enjoyed it.
It's cool to when you see, like, the continuous, like, OG characters, and I understand it's always a healthy thing to pass on the torch to a new generation, too, as well. I'm a fan of that, too. I'm always going to support that notion, but, you know, I think Scream has successfully done that throughout the franchise, where we're invested with these characters, like the David Arquette characters, Courtney Cox, like, when... I don't know if it's safe to spoil 6, but when one of them gets croaked,
right? Oh, that I think was 5, wasn't it?
5, right? That was 5. Yeah, that was 5. When one of them gets murked, it's like, it's kind of devastating because you're like, oh fuck, I've been down with this character since like 96, and so like you feel that notion, but then you're also kind of rooting for the new kids on the block to do something. It just sucks when they're stupid as fuck. and call themselves the Core 4.
Yeah, that was dumb.
The Cringe 4, dude. The Cringe 4, right there.
The Cringe, for sure. I will say, I mentioned this in, I think, either the Scream 5 review or the Scream 6 review, but I'm like, I'm not going to watch a Scream movie that doesn't have Sidney Prescott in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. Even though, because I think we got Nev for all of 5 minutes in Scream 5, but regardless.
She was like, they were enough. Six, right?
She wasn't in six, no.
She was not in six.
Yeah.
Well, she coming back for seven, apparently.
Are they doing a seven?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seven's
different director.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you guys stand with this right here? How do you guys feel about the now that six has marinated?
Okay. Did you hear know, that the hype has kinda... deep sigh that Anthony and I just let out? Yeah. That's how we feel about it.
Okay. No, because when we heard about it, the six hype was still around. This just came out last year, right? Yeah. So how are we feeling now that a year has passed and a seven is on the horizon?
I don't know, because, basically all that's confirmed is the movie is shooting late this year. So the earliest it's going to be in theaters is going to be late 2025 or early 2026, which it doesn't sound like a real year.
Last bit of news that I heard about this is that they kicked out Homegirl because she's a Palestine supporter, right?
Yeah, yes. Melissa Barrera.
Yeah.
So she was attached to it, and then she made pro-Palestine statements on Twitter, and I believe
she got the boot.
She got the boot, and then after that, your favorite Phil, what's her
name? Jenna Ortega.
Quit after she left.
Melissa, I do remember hearing about this. Barrera
got fired.
Mm-hmm.
So as of now, the only listed cast on Google is Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, Roger Jackson, of course, is the voice of Ghostface, and Patrick Dempsey.
That's right.
Because Patrick Dempsey is from 3, and it is hinted at in 5 that Sidney Prescott and Patrick Dempsey's character got married.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fucking gross that they kicked her out because she's a Palestine supporter. That's just ridiculous. I think, so Jenna Ortega really quit because of that. I gotta give her props for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I honestly do think this is gonna be the film, Scream 7 is gonna be the one, like we talked about it, and I don't want it, and I'll be really upset about it, but I do think this is gonna be the one where Sidney goes,
AWOL?
Yeah.
The killer?
Yeah.
I've been waiting for this for a long time now. You know what I was thinking about right now too? I think an interesting twist. Is this a question in discussion? I don't think you have this. All right, good. Because I was like, wait, maybe I'm just reading ahead.
No, you're good.
I was thinking an interesting twist that I've always wanted to see in a Scream movie is a killer is in the first 10 minutes stalking his first prey, kind of doing the whole Casey thing, gutting the person and caught red-handed by Sidney, boom, shoots the killer, unmasks the killer, Scooby-Doo style. It's a fucking person that we do not know, right? Calls the cops. Cops come, pulls him behind bars. Boom. We think the movie's already over, but dude, it's only been 10 or 15 minutes into the movie. What the fuck? Boom, another killer is calling Sidney, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, dude, this guy was obviously not working alone. We've seen this before, right? Mm-hmm. In the fucking last movie, we had a dad and, his two kids or something like that.
Yeah,
we
don't have a... Listen, oh, my God. I need to send you guys this meme that I've gotten sent not once but twice about who the killers are in Ghostface and, ranking them. And it's just that meme where it has a photo of all of them, and it's I just want to thank you, not you, not you either, all four being great ghost faces. And the not you, not you either it's the one from 4. It's Jill and freaking Charlie. And I'm just that is wrong.
I'm not gonna side with that, but I thought they were kind of weak killers too. But compared to six,
my thing. I was just incredibly loud, incorrect buzzer noise.
Non-Stew or Billy killers. I would probably go with my favorite one would probably be the director, the third, who ended up being a fucking brother to Sidney, a half brother to Sidney. Yeah. I thought that was a little more personal. Kind of pulled it out of the ass, out of left field, but I still kind of thought it was pretty cool.
I sent you the meme so you guys can see it, but Jesus Christ, I was so upset. head. I was like,
now that
like,
you're right, they've all been kind of weak. Yeah, huh?
Like, obviously, Billy and Stu are elite S tier.
Yeah.
You know, that would be funny. When we cover six, we're going to have to do a killer tier list.
Oh, down. So down.
Can we do a quick run through really quick? On two, it was Billy's mom and the boyfriend's friend, right?
Timothy Oliphant is the film
director. Timothy Oliphant,
yeah.
Three was the director, as I mentioned right now. Yes. Four was the ones that we've been talking about this whole time. Five was the boyfriend the girl from fucking Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes. And then freaking Huey.
Huey from... Oi, Huey. Looks like you become the ghost face killer. Huey. Didn't know you had it in you, mate.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
You fucking cunt.
I've always known you a fucking cunt the whole time, Huey.
That's funny. And then six is that whole family, and it was fucking stupid.
Oh, yeah, that was weak. Yeah. That's probably one of the weakest ones.
The weakest, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. I would say I would say five and six had weak killers, but four... I think it gets progressively worse from like four, five, and six. Yeah.
I didn't mind five so much, but I would say definitely the back half ones are weaker for sure.
Yeah, I would say so. That's what I'm saying. For seven, they got to do something. If they go with my angle, they catch the guy in the first 10 minutes, knowing that there's a second person, and then we got to find out the real mystery. Maybe Sydney needs to do a Silence of the Lambs and visit the guy in prison to get some info from him. I don't know.
Detective Sydney. Yeah.
I was
going
to say, Neve Campbell becomes an FBI agent.
Do something. Okay. They got to do something here.
Yeah.
But then again, I have no interest now with Seven, knowing the fact that they kicked homegirl out because she's a supporter of something. She believes in this.
It's messy. It's messy. That's what I don't like about it. Yeah,
it's just,
yeah.
Give me a few shots of this, and I'll go even more detail into this, but no, I'm sober right now, so I'm going to keep it...
You're not taco drunk anymore?
No.
Taco drunk.
Give me a few shots of tequila, and I'll be like, listen to me, let me tell you why I'm a Melissa Barrera's side on this.
Tomorrow, I'm going to cancel Phil. I'm going to record him saying... No, I'm sure whatever he says, I'm going to also believe in, so I'm not going to do that. Okay, so we do this every single time. But rank your rank Scream 4 in the Scream entries now that we have to, you know, account for Scream 6, because I don't know if we did it when we covered Scream 6. Because I believe, if I recall correctly, when we did our review for Scream 6, we were like, oh, we just did a review, or we just did a ranking, so we're not going to do one. Mm-hmm. So now we are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'll go first so you guys can think about it.
Yeah.
1, 2, 4... five, three, six.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm gonna go 1, 2, 4, 3, 5, 6.
Damn.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You're joking. Oh.
No. Actually, I think I have a new appreciation for three. That just came out of nowhere.
Has fucking spirit and personality, which these last two movies are seriously lacking.
I think three is super absurd in a lot of ways, and I kind of appreciate its absurdity, but it still sticks to the kind of tone of one and two pretty strongly. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily
agree with the tone part, but I do think it has heart. I do think
it has a lot of heart.
There were a lot of good ideas that, because of studio interference and a whole other multitude of reasons, I don't think it got fleshed out the way that it probably should have been, but
yes,
listen to our Scream 3 episode for, I'm sure, more hot takes like that.
definitely. But I would actually say the gap between 4 and 5 is pretty big. Mm-mm-mm. So, and I would say the gap between 1 and 2 is a big gap between 3 and 4, and then 3 and 4 is a big gap between 5 and 6. So that's kind of how I would like justify that flow. Yeah. So here's the hope, and 7 kind of closes that a little bit.
A part of me kind of wants to keep 4, like, in my POV, I want to keep 4 in the same playground, the same sandbox as 1, 2, and 3. 5 and 6, they're in a completely different fucking park, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I hold 4 in the same sandbox as 1, 2, and 3.
Agreed.
That makes sense.
I would say it is a almost fall day here in Southern California, and watching Scream 4 was like, it felt very early fall. Like, it felt very cozy.
It's got the vibes.
It has.
And that's something that we pointed out, the obvious, dude. I say those things about 5 and 6, not because I don't dislike them. It's not, well, I mean, I do dislike them, but it is obvious that it's missing Wes Craven, like, for sure. Like, yeah. it's straight up right there. That's why I'm just like, I know I say a lot of mean, I treat 5 and 6 very meanly and stuff like that, but it's for a good reason.
Well, yeah.
So I said, I want to say when we covered Scream 2 frickin' forever ago, I said the only way I would accept a Scream 5 or above is if Wes Craven left like a series of clues, like a scavenger hunt that led to like a box buried somewhere, like a what's in the box situation. Mm-hmm. But instead of a human head, it's like an extra screenplay that he's like, here's Scream 5, gotcha.
I can't say that I know Wes Craven or anything like that, you know, like, but I think you'd be so down to have a Sydney being the killer idea to shoot that. Like, he always strikes me as somebody who has these crazy ideas. Just look at his resume. I think it's like Wes Craven would be like, oh, that sounds so crazy. It might just fucking work. Let's do it.
Well,
he would.
I think he would be on board if it was the close to the franchise. Like, if he was like, this is what I have left. Like, this is what I envision the end to be.
You push somebody so far to the edge, man, all your friends are going to be dead, man.
Yeah.
Precisely. Yeah, he would do it within his own way and make it work, for sure. Yeah.
He would find a way. I think him and Kevin Williamson would really put a really good arc for Sydney where it's like, oh, man, she's fully gone Anakin Skywalker. Like, there's and maybe Gail would be like the Obi-Wan Kenobi character.
Ah, those poor younglings. Mm-hmm. Those poor younglings.
Yeah, dude, I'm saying.
I really hated it when Sydney just, like, basically did, like, a school shooting. That sucks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude, like, if Sydney, dude, like, seriously, man, like, let's just think about this for a second. Lord of the Rings, when Frodo turns around and they're at Mount Doom, the lava's right there, all he has to do is just drop the fucking ring. He turns around, what do you got? What does he do to Sam? The ring is mine. Sam starts crying, goes, no, Frodo, no. And then, dude, we're getting little tiny hints here and there that Cody Rhodes might go full fucking heel.
I'm telling you.
And when that happens, the society is going to be just like Samwise Gamgee, like, no! Dude, if Sydney were to do that shit, dude, looks to Gail and says, Gail, what's your fucking favorite scary movie? Fucking tries to attack her and like, dude, it'd be fucking sick. I am so down. We need to have Sydney as a killer now.
You're
I would like for her to fully turn heel.
I think, yeah, because here's the thing, is like, all, like, even, Sydney has been the less tainted final girl out of all the main ones. Because even poor Jamie Lee Curtis got, like, put through so much shit back and forth because of all the retcons. Scream has been what?
I think she's took more shit than anybody else.
Oh, for sure. But that's what I mean, though, is like Sydney and like the Scream franchise has dealt with minimal retconning, which is a miracle considering. So I'm curious to see how that would plan out, but also I would be really sad about it because Sydney has been such a consistent heroine through the whole thing.
That's true.
Yeah,
I'm not opposed to it.
It's just got to make sense. They got to make it make sense. Yeah.
Agreed.
Which might be hard, but it could happen.
Possibly.
So. Yeah, dude.
Hell yeah.
Well, we'll see. I'm fucking, I don't know, man. I'm super on board with this idea. If Scream 7 were to go, if you guys were to watch, I'm probably not going to see Scream 7 when it comes out.
If we watch Scream 7 and she's the killer, do you want us to tell
I
you?
Probably, I think you guys should give me a hint, like, Phil, like, hold my shoulder, shake me a little bit. You need to go see Scream 7.
We have to have an activation phrase.
Yeah.
That's
You need to like literally look me in the eyes like, dude, go fucking see Scream 7. I'm telling you right now. I'll be like, oh fuck. Has it finally happened? And it doesn't happen, it ends up being shittier than 6. Oh, yeah. I'm going to fucking hate you guys even more.
But we would do that. I would absolutely do that to you. 100%.
Now you've given us an opportunity. I just simply can't refuse. I know. But anyway, guys, let's wrap this up. Yes. I have a couple fun questions before we rank this and get the hell out of here. Kill of the film. I think we talked about it earlier, but for me personally, the mom's death, like get the stabbing through the mail slot, always kind of. I was like, oh, that's fucked.
That's pretty gruesome. Yeah.
I'm gonna go Anthony Anderson.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that one. It's a good one. It's bloody. It's brutal. But also a little fun at the end, right there, when he says "fuck Bruce Willis," and then he just falls. Right.
It does have a mix of the good and the bad.
Yeah.
I like Anthony Anderson's. I'd say that's the strongest kill for sure. I do like the way it ends though with the clear. I don't know why. I think that was a fun little setup, and it felt very Craven-y. So I'll give it the Craven points.
All right.
For that.
Excellent. Yeah. That was fast. Okay. What horror icon would be the best ghost face? Like Godzilla as Ghostface, Pinhead as Ghostface. Ooh. Not the actors who play these icons, but the icons themselves.
Horror icon. Let me tell you something.
Like, be Ghostface in what sense? Like
imagine like would be like they're the killer in a ghost movie or in a ghost movie in a Scream movie.
Oh, and they revealed to be. Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Okay.
Leprechaun.
Oh, there you go.
And not just Leprechaun in the Hood, Leprechaun, dude.
Oh my god,
dude.
Damn. That's so fucking funny.
Like Ghostface is defeated. He's down. He's been shot, but he's still alive. He's hanging in there. Fucking Neve Campbell's like, let's see who's behind the fucking mask, asshole. Removes the mask. Well, hello there, young lady. Looks like you've caught me over here, haven't ya? A friend with weed is a friend indeed. And then out of nowhere, like Ice-T just pops up. He's the second Ghostface. He's the one who's been making.
Oh, there's two Ghostfaces.
He's the one who's been making the phone calls, while Leprechaun is the one who's been making the killings, which is physically awkward because Leprechaun is a leprechaun in a Ghostface fucking suit.
He's a wee lad.
Yeah, and then while you know, Ice-T is the more intimidating, physically intimidating figure compared to Leprechaun, and he's making the phone calls. And, I'm just going to go with Ice-T and Leprechaun. Leprechaun in the Hood.
I love that.
I'll go with Patrick Bateman. He's just, this is just something he does on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. He's just like, oh, yeah, no, actually, I focused this specifically with the mask because I get really bored. All my friends are at the club right now, and I think this is actually more of a good use of my time. Mm-hmm. And, like, he'd really explain why his ghost facing, he's just doing it for shits and giggles. Like, that, he would do a very good job. Ooh. I'd say Patrick Bateman would be a great one. And the second Chucky, or the second one would be Chucky and Tiffany and Glenn, or Glenda, just stacked on top of each other.
In a
ghost face suit.
That's so
funny.
Oh,
and they would just be tumbling around and shit, and they'd be like, this guy fucking said he could get us, like, good, easy victims, but he's taking all the goddamn kills. Like, that's what would be... why would they work together? It's like, yeah, I summon the fucking dolls. Who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. Like that. I think the parlay between those very different characters would be a lot of fun. But it would be, Patrick Bateman taking it very seriously, and the whole Chucky crew just on top of each other in a ghost face suit.
Hilarious. Maybe let me help you a little bit right here on this one. Maybe we can have a scene where Patrick Bateman is like, you know, in society, he's not, you know, he's hiding his true self. He's out with a crowd of friends. He's sitting at a table having lunch with friends, right? One of his friends says, hey, did you guys hear about the stabathon coming? I got us all ghost face masks, but check mine out. Everyone's all showing up with ghost face masks. Very nice mask. Very nice. Let's see Paul Allen's ghost face mask. And then, like, in slow motion, like this super authentic ghost face mask just pops up, and then we hear the monologue coming in. He's like, oh, look, just look at the feeling, the light, the texture on the chin, the face. Oh god, it even has a watermark. Like stuff like that.
Oh, and that'd be good.
And then he starts sweating, and then he just walks away. People start getting the suspicions.
Do you think Paul Allen's ghost face mask is like one of the cool ones that has like a blood pump in it?
Probably.
Absolutely.
Instead of a watermark, he's like, oh god, it even has a blood pump.
Like, it even glows in the dark.
In the dark. And that is how there's clues where it's like, oh, this guy's fucking tripping out over here. This guy might be a killer.
Yeah. That's good. I like it. I like it.
For me, I'm going to say John Kramer and Amanda. Jigsaw.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I like it. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think the line between Jigsaw and Ghostface are very minimal, so I think it would be an easy enough transition for a Scream movie to transition into a Saw movie.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. Nice. I love it. Yes. Yeah. That's good. That works.
Pretty much, dude. Like, the whole time in Scream, the first one, where like Sydney's running around trying to figure out what the fuck's going on. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. John is with her fucking dad and is just like, I want to play a game. You know, Sydney's dad all the while, he's tied up in a freaking closet the whole weekend, man. Has to, like, you know, he live or die, make your choice, dude.
Yeah.
So
it works.
That's mine.
When you when you first said your names, I recently watched Can't Hardly Wait. I showed Savannah Can't Hardly Wait recently. Mm-hmm. She's never seen the movie, so we watched it together. She enjoyed it. But it's a fucking blast always revisiting that 90s classic movie. But when you said Amanda,
I haven't seen it, so I'm not.
No. Okay. I thought you said Amanda and Mike Dexter.
Yeah,
from Can't Hardly Wait.
Yeah.
So Jennifer Love Hewitt and the dad from Twilight. Oh. Yeah. I was like, because then I was thinking like, oh yeah, well, you're the one, Amanda.
I was going to say the same shit. And oh,
I was like, oh dude, from Can't Hardly Wait, that's fucking awesome. But no, then I'm like, oh, she's talking about Saul. Never mind.
Anthony has called dibs on showing me Can't Hardly Wait. So
it's going to be a Zerk, please.
We watched
please.
It like 2 weeks ago because we had blue balls from Bro Zerk because we're like, it's between that or a Bronx Tale, and we wanted the Bronx Tale. So I think the next day we're at my apartment, and we're like, dude, should we just throw on fucking Can't Hardly Wait? I think you'll like it. And yeah, we had a blast.
Oh yeah, because we were going to do Can't Hardly Wait, but then James wanted in on it, so we couldn't.
Yes, we were waiting for James.
Yeah.
Man, James, dude.
So, that's funny. And then also Cheryl wants to partake in watching Can't Hardly Wait because she loves that movie and it's wants to show
movie.
Me.
Yeah, it's a great fucking movie. We need to watch it. Absolutely. I would love to be there.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be my mini housewarming event. Can't Hardly
Ooh,
Wait.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Anyway, I think that's it for this entry in the Scream franchise, guys.
Yeah.
We made it.
That is it.
Real quick, before we get out of here, rate this film out of 5 cameos.
Oh, this is a tough one, actually.
It's 4 for me.
It's 4?
I'm gonna go 3 fuck Bruce Willis's.
Okay.
Damn, nice. I am definitely going to give it 3 fake out opening kills for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're right.
It's a solid 3, but 4 is very respectable. I can see why.
4 is, definitely. Yeah. I don't know why. This movie is just like, it has, like, I at first hated it, but then I sat with it and I've come to appreciate it a little bit more. So.
That's good. Nice.
I'm a fan.
Nice.
All right. Next week, well, before we get to that, thank you guys, everyone, for listening. That was Scream 4 from 2011. Thank you for letting me wax poetic about Wes Craven for a little bit, too. That was very special.
Yeah. To our boy.
Thank you for letting me write it, Fwen. You always write the Scream movies, so.
I know. I was like, no. She got this. Fly.
Next week, I have no idea what we're covering because we haven't decided yet. So, you know. Tune in next week.
Yeah, Phil, decide.
Fuck. All
right. I wasn't going to publicly shame Phil.
I will absolutely publicly shame Phil.
But Gwen has no issue in publicly shaming me.
It's okay. I think he likes it a little bit.
I kind of do.
That's shame the Baron I'm talking right there. That's the Baron I'm talking.
Yeah. Shame him harder. He likes it. All right. So tune in next week where we talk about something. I'm sure it'll be a good time, though. In the meantime, if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest of all of our podcasting shenanigans, you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. We are the flagship podcast of the Horrible People's Network. We have a whole slew of fun podcasts for you to listen to. If you like anything nerdy, there's a chance we talk about it in one way or another. So go check us out on Instagram at Horrible People's Network, spelled the same way, HORRORBLE People's Podcast, or Network, And then if you want to find Anthony, he has a podcast on the network. It is npc.gaming.pod.
She did it right. Yeah.
And you can check that out on Instagram. And then if you want to find me, I have a bunch of stuff, but you can find me, my personal Instagram, at Ghost Coffee Shop. I also talk about books, and so at Ghost Bookshop as well. Phil is on Instagram at Phil Acevedo. He is also on YouTube at Phil Acevedo. So you can check him out there as well. I love all of Phil's fun little videos that he makes. They're always entertaining.
Thank you. Just don't call it content.
I didn't. I specifically didn't.
I know. I'm so fucking happy you didn't. I'd really break my heart if you did.
No. You know me so well. Though it's literally just you like doing what you love, and I appreciate that tremendously. Yeah.
I fucking love you for saying that.
You're welcome. So until next week, when we're talking about who knows, maybe if you get a call from an unknown phone number, be a millennial and just don't answer it.
There you go. I like that.
Bye, guys.
Hell yeah.
See ya. Bye-bye.